Recording started.
Great, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures PVT Subgroup C call held on Thursday, the 6th of December, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Just hearing no names, I just want to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Thank you for the introduction, and welcome everyone to another episode of Subgroup C, reviewing the comments where we left off last week and objections. Before we get into the fun for today, I'd like to kindly ask if there are any updates to any statements of interest. You are welcome to voice them or to type them into the chat. Hearing none, let's go ahead and get started. Can we have a PDF document uploaded, please? Thank you. And again, this, I think I don't need to repeat this, but just for namesake, I will. The objective here is to go over the comments and to kind of clarify and look at some of the aspects, make sure that they're good to pass over to the full working group. But our job is not to sit there, is not to go into the meat of these comments and whether or not we personally agree or disagree. But merely for clarification purposes, if you will. Staff has done an excellent job going through all the comments and pulling out the ones that are agreement and those that are against and those that have maybe clarifying questions or suggestions / new ideas. And we've grouped these as well together to make it as efficient as possible. We'll be going through these as quickly as possible as well, because we have a lot on our plates and so little time to do it in. Let's go ahead and get started then. We left off last week with objections, I think, at 2.8.1.D.2, and this week we will start with 2.8.1.D.3. Okay, all right. Let's go ahead and get started. And I will go through these by the question, read out the full question. For those that are in agreement, I will most likely not read out the full statement unless it has something that needs to be highlighted. Specifically, when I stop at agreement, when I stop with this, the category of comments, I will open it up for questions. And then when we get to those comments that have different ideas and maybe are against the recommendation or the option, I guess, then we will comment those one by one. All right, then. So then, okay, we are actually, so the page that you see now in front of you is still in the C section, so we're looking, going to need to move to D section. So bear with me as I move my scroll through here. Scroll is working a lot better than it did last week. All right. Okay. All right. Let's, oh, that scroll has stopped working. Wonderful. Okay. Now it's working. Okay. There we are. 2.8.1.D.3. Individual governments should not be allowed to use the GAC advice mechanism absent full consensus support by the GAC. Then governments should instead file a string objection utilizing the existing ICANN procedures, community objections, string confusion objections, legal rights objections, limited public interest objections. So for those that are agreeing, we have the ALAC supported for this, for the intent of this option. The BRG supports this option. INTA also supports this option, strongly supports this recommendation. The RRYSG, Registry Stakeholder Group, supports this recommendation. MARC Monitor supports GAC advice requiring full GAC support. They cite laws, limited specific strings, and should be able to resolve objections through PICs, RCEPs, and supports Quick Look or similar. So let's move on to the next one. The IPC has support for this recommendation, and we have completed the agreement here, the agreement section, and we'll look at the GAC comments in a moment. I'd just like to ask if there's any questions, opinions about the material itself, not personal specifically, but or other matters of clarification about those. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and jump into the GAC comment, which is the same as we saw last week, which is merely a comment that was applied to all these subsections that deal with the GAC, stating that the GAC does welcome the opportunity to discuss options to increase the transparency and fairness of these arrangements, but the GAC does not support that the PDP should make recommendations on GAC activities, which are carried out in accordance with the bylaws and GAC's internal procedures. So, divergence, but agreement in some aspects. Would anyone like to discuss this at this point? I hear none, so I feel comfortable to move on to the next section, since we already have a vibe for how to handle this at this point. So the 2.8.1.D.4, the application process should define a specific time period during which GAC early warnings can be issued and require that the governments issue such warnings, include both a written rationale, basis, and specific action requested of the applicant. The applicant should have an opportunity to engage in direct dialogue in response to such warning and amend the application during a specific time period, during a specified time period. Another option might be the inclusion of public interest comments, PICs, to address any outstanding concerns about the application. So, those that are in agreement, we have the ALAC, we have the Council of Europe, that part of a larger competent transparency, they do support this option. We have the Brand Register Group that supports this. We have Newstar that supports this. We have the Registry Stakeholder Group that supports this. We have the IPC that supports this. We have INTA that supports this with slash what is categorized as a new idea, and I will read the new idea. As with any GAC interaction, INTA also suggests requiring any early warning notice to nominate and provide contact details for an authorized GAC contact who is knowledgeable about the grounds for the potential objection and authorized to discuss solutions and settle the early warning notice. So it is a support, but also with a suggestion to have a liaison appointed for such comments that are, for such early warnings that are raised. And then we have we have a hand raised. Please go ahead, and please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Małgorzata Pęk, Council of Europe. I have a remark of a general nature, so not specifically connected with 281D4, but more of general nature. So basically, in our position, Council Europe position to the public consultation, we provided a set of considerations, observations, and most of them are have cross-cutting character, so they do not refer to specific issue point, specific observation in the report, in the initial report. So, and it seems that this general nature of our comments has been slightly lost. So I would like to use this opportunity to ask Secretariat to consider adding this general comments at the end of the table, possibly as general comments. I noted that at the end of the table there is a category other comments, but I would like to request to reconsider giving these general comments a little bit more prominence and possibly request the whole working group to consider these proposals. So this is a general comment, not directly indeed referred to the specific point, but it's, since it's I couldn't take part in the last meeting of a subgroup, I'm using this opportunity to raise this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for that comment. And I do want to say that we are very well open to making sure we highlight those aspects. This initial grouping that we did, we understand that it didn't perhaps sort of capture the full picture, the full aspect of what was written. It was done for efficiency purposes. general comments, as Cheryl has stated, that though general comments are not the purview of this group. And what we can do is we can pull those. If there is something that needs to be highlighted, we can pull that to the end. I mean, if it does appear to be different. But we do have a lot of comments being raised in the chat here, as well as I think Jim has his hand up to also voice on this. But I do want to say that we're not against that, but we'd also like to welcome further input to see what specifically we should be raising to the full working group for clarity purposes. So let me pass this to Jim, and then I think maybe Emily or Cheryl would like may want to voice what they are typing in the chat. So, all right, Jim, go ahead.
Yep, thanks a lot, Michael. Jim Prendergast, for the record. So maybe I'm, just so I better understand what the ask was, is it as simple as instead of, you know, cutting from the larger comment on transparency and only including Roman numerals 8 and 9, was the representative from the Council of Europe asking that the entire comment on transparency just be reflected in this cell and then maybe the relevant 8 and 9 be highlighted so it's easy to see what's specific to this? I'm just trying to get a better sense of what the ask is. Thanks.
Thank you. And I think I'll turn that question back over to, please apologize if I don't say your name correctly, but Malgorzata, perhaps? Let me turn that back over to you if you'd like to comment on that question that Jim has.
Yes. So indeed, if we could, our request was to give our general comments, general considerations, a little bit more prominence, possibly at the end of the table. I can send you possibly some drafting suggestion on how to phrase I mean, indeed, our submission is quite large, but I can propose some more synthetic version of our key comments. A lot of these comments refer indeed to the objection procedures. Our main considerations with regard are about fairness, transparency, and accountability. And possibly my proposal is that at the end of a table, this general comment in more synthetic but still visible way could be better highlighted, provided, explained. Right now it's the some
if
of
I
them
may.
Are mentioned. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for this. We have a very, it's Cheryl Langdonor for the record, we have extremely limited time on the subgroups calls. This topic is not in fact the purview of this subgroup anyway. You've offered to send it to the list and Emily has welcomed that, and we'll make sure that your concerns and your drafting go to the appropriate subgroup, which is subgroup A, not subgroup C, which is where we are today, and we'll pick it up intersession and interact with you appropriately. But right now, if you don't mind, I'd like to get us back on track on this subgroup's activities. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Cheryl, and thank you, Michael Thompson, for raising that. I'm just going to take it at that, and we welcome any that fee sent to the mailing list so we can better digest that. So let me, where was I? The GAC, no, the NCSG comment, forget me. Excuse me, one more. Sorry, I just got to clear the throat, a few frogs in there. Okay, so we have an NCSG comment that is agreement with concern, the additional consideration, the caveat. So I'm not going to read the agreement, but I will read the concern. The public and ICANN community should be given notice of these proposed modifications and the opportunity to comment to agree, disagree, or modify such proposals. Nothing should be bilateral or done in secret. All modifications to the GTLD applications must be done openly and publicly with the opportunity to review, comment, and consent. I am just briefly looking over the agreement as well. This is in regards to an applicant modifying their comment in regards to a in regards to a GAC-related warning. But I don't want to say that we don't already have this. I mean, I think that the aspect of changing an application is a requirement of the application process already, and I believe this is already captured. I'm happy to ask anybody to disagree with me or to offer any additional feedback that might be helpful in this. But before I do that, we have another NCSG comment as well, and I just want to make sure that this is in the right place. Is that correct that we have two comments from the same party in two different cells? Yes? Okay. All right, then. So if anyone would like to comment on that first, the first NCSG comment, please feel free to do so. I don't see any hands being raised, so I'll just jump to the next one. This is concerns that reiterates that PICs should be narrowly tailored, changes made transparently, and take into account legal rights. Public interest comments must be very narrowly tailored to the specific government concern voiced in the early warning and must be shared with the public for notice, comment, critique, and revision. Excuse me. This must not be a two-party negotiated change between the applicant and government when issues of due process, content, intellectual property, free expression, and other legal rights are involved. So there is a little bit of relation between those two, and I welcome anybody to comment on those now or type into the chat. In the meantime, if you don't raise your hand, I'm just going to move on to the next comment, which is from the GAC, which is the same comment. They agree, but they agree that they're welcome to work on transparency issues, but we shouldn't be making recommendations about GAC activities. So then, we also have one more comment from the Government of India, submitted by IN Registry. It's just a comment about general early warning that does not directly address the option, but it says that they support for the GAC early warning mechanism. Kind of a re-emphasis, if you will. So, with that, I feel that we have concluded that section, and I will move on now to the next question. 2.8.1.E.1, role of the GAC. Some have stated that Section 3.1 of the applicant guidebook creates a veto right for the GAC to any new GTLD application or string. Is there any validity to this statement? Please explain. So Marx has replied with agreement that there is an issue and there's a suggestion for a path forward. They believe that there should be flexibility for the board to accept the GAC advice and then to address the concerns behind the GAC advice. For example, through the creation of PICs, thereby approving the application, albeit subject to certain conditions. Okay, good. I believe I captured that correctly. The ALAC suggests this with a suggestion for path forward, stating, oh, darn scroller. stating that any new GTLD, they're opposed to any veto right that the app they're opposed to the aspect of a veto right. To oppose any new GTLD application or string is one that is incorrectly held for the reasons stated below. On the basis, we suggest the removal of all references to a strong presumption to be taken by the ICANN board. Okay, that's a lot there, but I think we can capture that in a general nature here. If any of you feel that I need to make sure we highlight all those bulletins or all aspects of a certain comment, please feel free to raise your hand. The Brand Registry Group also agrees with this and state that this may be resolved by incorporating the requirement for the GAC advice to include a clearly articulated rationale, the national or international law, and their merits-based public policy reasons upon which their advice is based. INTA also suggests, agrees with this for suggestions for path forward. Subsequent IRPs, independent review panels challenging board decisions based on such GAC advice have considered and rejected this type of veto. We do have that as factual. The GAC has not been granted a veto under ICANN's government documents. And INTA agrees that no one stakeholder should have a veto right in relation to word, strings, and all applicants and objections should be able to participate equally in relation to the GTLD application process. There may be merit in making it clear that GAC advice is exactly that, advice. Same with the Registry Stakeholder Group. Agreement with suggestions for a path forward. One potential option for addressing this issue is to revise the applicant guide to claim is to read. The GAC can provide consensus GAC advice on any application, provided, however, that the GAC advice must include a rationale and identify the national or international law. And two, merits-based application policy, public policy reasons upon which it is based. So we have that reoccurring in numerous suggestions. The IPC also supports with path forward for rationale. With suggestion for moving forward. If this section were to be taken out of the applicant guidebook, the GAC can still provide consensus advice on an application. And the board would have more flexibility to attempt to work with the applicant to resolve the concerns behind the advice, and if successful, allow the applicant to proceed. This could involve the creation of PICs or other mutually beneficial solutions. In essence, it would eliminate the binary choice under the guidebook today, of A, accept the GAC advice and not allow the application to move forward, and B, or B, reject GAC advice and take application as is. Okay, then the NCSG is also provides a suggestion. They agree with this, that it creates a veto right, and it should be appropriate as a matter of public. Okay, so there's not much there. All right, so those are our comments in regards to that aspect. I went to that section completely, but is there anybody that'd like to jump in here? Justine, you're typing something in the chat. I'm happy to give you the microphone if you'd like to. Oh, here we are. Okay, so we have 2.8.1.E.1. The ALEC comment may want to highlight consideration where the GAC advice procedure should remain captured under the applicant guidebook module objection procedure. Let me jump at that. Let me scroll back up here. Where are we on that? Which sort of leads to presumption that it is an objection procedure when it is not. Which bulletin is that? Which from down? Let's see. It's published. Line 101. 101. Sorry, could you, 101. Well, it may be misleading that the GAC advice procedure is provided for under Applicant Guidebook Model 3 Objection Procedure. A GAC advice, in fact, does not equate to an objection. It is and is the same, and as the name suggests, an advice which is structured to draw attention to an application which is seemingly problematic. Example given, one that potentially violates national law or raises sensitivities, and which, if and when it issued, is directed to the ICANN Board of Directors. All right, perfect. Thank you. Okay, we have highlighted that, and we've made sure to put that in there. And I think we've also captured that in the notes as well. Is there anything else we want to highlight in this section, or am I welcome to move on? We've still got half of objections to go through. All right, well, let me move forward then. 2.8.1.E.2, role of the GAC. Given the changes to the ICANN bylaws with respect to the board's consideration of GAC advice, is it still necessary to maintain the presumption that if the GAC provides advice against a string or an application, that such string or application should not proceed? Overall, there's general agreement that the presumption should not exist. Responses include suggestions to provide more flexibility for the board to accept the GAC advice and take action to address underlying concerns and incorporate requirements for GAC advice to include a clearly articulated rationale. The GAC does not think it is appropriate for the PDP to make or remit recommendations on this issue. So that's the overall summary of the comments. And given the time, I'm just going to stroll through these unless there is something that we really need to highlight. So the ALAC agrees that suggestion that the board should consider GAC advice but is not obligated to accept it. The Brand Registry Group has seen the reply to the former. INTA is not appropriate for this presumption to remain, as it may be misinterpreted to contradict updated bylaws. Registry Stakeholder Group suggests that the applicant guidebook should state that upon receipt of consensus, GAC advice that a particular application should not proceed, the ICANN board should have the option to facilitate remediation. Hold on a second, let me make sure I understood that fully. For your patience, the ICANN board. Yes, the ICANN board should have the option to facilitate the regulation. Okay, good. Conclusive with what I understood the first time. NCSG agrees that it no longer needed to give advice the same weight. The IPC, it is difficult to presume how the current changes will weigh in with GAC advice against the string. It's a concern of the IPC that it's difficult to presume how the current changes will weigh in with GAC advice against the string. I wonder if there's more to that comment. I honestly cannot remember at this point exactly if there was more specifically to this comment or what the nature of behind that. I did participate in writing these. Susan, might you have an idea what exactly the IPC is trying to say? Sorry to put you on the spot, what they mean, but it might be difficult to presume how the current changes will weigh in with the GAC advice against the string. Or anybody else? Perhaps I'm not reading that correctly. Oh, with the changes to the bylaws. Okay, sorry. So with the changes to the bylaws, yes, it is difficult to presume how it will... how GAC advice will move forward. So let's not spend more time on that specific comment. And the GAC has the same comment saying that we should not be making recommendations. So I think we cleared that section very well. Would anyone like to say anything at this point? Jim, you have the floor.
Yeah, thanks. I'll just point to the comments I put in the chat. I'm assuming the GAC dissension here is something that will be dealt with at the plenary level. I just want to make sure that my thinking on that is correct.
Indeed, indeed. It will be dealt with on the plenary level and not here. There's not much more we can say at this moment, I think, as we're not wearing in specifically on the comments. Although we're welcome, GAC members are welcome to provide more clarity into their comments if they just... I don't see anyone raising their hand, so I'll assume not at this point. Okay, let's move on to 2.8.1.E.3. All right, I got that one on the first time. Okay, role of the GAC. Does the presumption that a string will not proceed limit ICANN's ability to facilitate a solution that both accepts GAC advice but also allows for the delegation of a string if the underlying concerns that gave rise to the objection were addressed? Does that presumption unfairly prejudice other legitimate interests? So, BRG agrees with this, presumption. INTA also agrees. Oh, sorry. The overlying comment, let me go back up two cells here. So there is general agreement that the presumption limits the ability to find resolution. Some responses repeat suggestions provided in response to preceding questions. Okay. So with that in mind, let's go forward. The brand registry agreement agrees. The INTA group agrees. The registry stakeholder group agrees. IPC agrees. The NGPC agrees. And the ALAC voices concerns. So the ALAC suggests that there is no presumption that a string will not proceed. The ALAC takes the view that this question is awkwardly phrased, as there is, in fact, no presumption that a string will not proceed. This is an example of an incorrectly formed notion, and therefore the ALAC suggests the removal of any such preference to a presumption altogether. So the way in which the question is written is incorrect. Would anyone like to comment on the agreement, what was voiced in agreement, or what ALAC has voiced as a concern about how the question is written? Excuse me again. See lots of typing as well. So, yep, kick it to the plenary. Okay. Justine, you have the floor.
Thanks, Michael. This is Justine. If I just could clarify, I don't quite know where the phrase "will not proceed" comes from, because in the AGB, in the it talks about should not proceed. There is no reference to will not proceed. So that's where ALAC's concern arises from. Thanks.
Michael, if you're speaking, we're not hearing you, Cheryl.
Hi, Michael. Your microphone is. I can see it's moving, but we can't hear you.
Yep.
I'm sure he's saying wonderful things.
I'm sure positive. Down to be the case, Jim.
Michael, okay. Do you want to try dropping? Yeah. Do you want to go ahead, Cheryl? Maybe Michael can try dropping.
No, go on anyway. Yeah. Okay. I'm not
Hi,
sure
all.
What
this
he's
is...
asking you to do, Steve. Let's have a go.
Sure. Thanks. This is Steve Chan from staff. I was actually looking through the applicant guidebook just to try to find the reference that while there was a pause, actually. So I was looking in the applicant guidebook, and then in section 1.1.2.7 of the applicant guidebook, where it talks about receipt of GAC advice on new GTLDs, I think I might be looking at what Justine raised. So in this section, it reads, if the board receives GAC advice on new GTLDs stating that it is the consensus of the GAC that a particular application should not proceed, this will create a strong presumption for the ICANN board that the application should not be approved. If the board does not act in accordance with this type of advice, it must provide rationale for doing so. So I think if I'm understanding this correctly, what Justine and the ALAC are saying is that it's not a will not proceed, it's a should not proceed. I'm not sure if I'm getting the nuance quite right there, but that's my reading while we wait for Michael to get back on audio. Okay, great.
Well, a will make a big difference in the English language. At least that's what my mama used to tell me. But can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello?
We can hear you, Michael. Can you hear us?
Hello? Perfect. All right. Okay. Okay, good. I seem to be back from the dead. So, all right then. Where were we? I have lost my entire... Just a moment as I find myself. Okay, we got veto right. We've got 2.81.3.3. We've got 4. We got 5. Did we touch 5 yet? Okay, no, we didn't. No, wait, maybe I went too far. I went too far. Okay, let's end up in the objection. Okay, here we go. 2.8.1.8.4. All right, then. Role of the independent objector. In the 2012 round, all funding for the independent objector came from ICANN. Should this continue to be the case? Should there be a limit to the number of objections filed by the independent objector? So, most of the comments agree that funding should be maintained for the independent objector, and no limits should be placed on the number of objections. The registry stakeholder group provides a caveat that the recommendation reform should be put in place. The NSGC suggests limiting or eliminating the role of the independent objector. All right, then let's go through all the wonderful comments that agree. So the ALAC suggests that ICANN should continue to provide all funding for the independent objector in the next round. Council of Europe, part of a larger comment on fairness, support to continue the independent objector, and link this to GPI, which I fail to know the acronym at this point. Does anyone know the acronym for GPI?
Global Public Interest Goals.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, good. Link it to Global Public Interest Goal. All right, then. The Brand Registry Group, they would expect ICANN to continue funding the independent objector. There should not be a limit up to the number of objections filed by the independent objector. INTA suggests that ICANN should continue to provide funding. And the Registry Stakeholder Group provides the caveat. They suggest that ICANN should continue to provide all the funding in the next round, and that there should be no cap on the number of objections. Yes, all funding for the independent objector should come from ICANN. To maintain the intended neutrality. No, there should not be a numerical limit on the number of objections. As long as other recommended forms, conflict of interest policy, elimination of extraordinary circumstances, exception, naming identification of one or more parties that initiated or supported the objection are adopted. Oh, sounds like a good caveat. IPC says that the independent objector is needed to provide, since private parties with good cause may not be able to fund. Japan, and then we have the NCSG that has divergence. The role of the independent objector should roles be eliminated for, at the very least, significantly reduced, as it does not hold a successful track record in the overall process and is quite expensive to maintain. The independent objector should not be able to make an objection to a GTLD unless there has been an official and publicly documented request to the independent objector from at least one party harmed before the independent objector may consider making that objection. Should the role continue? So, right then, Justine, you've asked for the ALAC also. You've asked for a comment to be made in green that that ALAC also agreed that there should be no limits to the number of objections that the IO can file. Can this be in green? I think we can make that doable. And would anyone else like to jump in on this section? If not, we're happy to move on to the next section. Hearing none, let's move on to 2.8.1.E.5, role of the independent objector. I'm going to have this word down by the end of the night. In the 2012 round, the independent objector was permitted to file an objection to an application where an objection had already been filed on the same ground only in extraordinary circumstances. Should this extraordinary circumstances exception remain? If so, why and what constitutes extraordinary circumstances? First comment, we have a general review that different perspectives are expressed about whether the extraordinary circumstances exception should remain. So the Council of Yerbit is in agreement. The proposal to amend the rule that absent extraordinary comments, the IO, I'm just going to call the independent objector IO at this point. We've said enough times. The IO is not permitted to file an objection to an application where an objection has already been filed on the same ground deserves support. ALAC, agreement / new idea. What constitutes extraordinary circumstances? It is likely possible to exhaustively list these, but a couple which could feasibly arise are where the reasons for which the IO files his or her objection differ substantially to those raised by the other objector. This would also mean the nature of basis raised by the IO and the other objector would likely not coincide. The IO's basis for his or her objection are prima facie, wider or more far-reaching in scope impact than those raised by the other objector. See also a response to the following section, so we'll get to that one as well. We also have INTA. Supports this with suggesting that some further policy work be done to review how this concept is treated under generally accepted international law, so the PDP working group can suggest a draft definition for public review and comment. For example, a likely gross miscarriage of justice may constitute an extraordinary circumstance. Example given, perhaps an objection filed on the same ground was fraudulently or incompetently filed to prevent another objection proceeding on the same ground. Thanks for the suggestion, Tim. Jim, but I don't think I'm going to get into that just yet. The Brand Registry Group says the BRG recommends the exception should be removed. It is divergence from keeping the exception. Alrighty then. We also have Newstar saying that they should remove the exception. Our industry stakeholder group also is in divergence, stating that no, the extraordinary circumstances exception should be removed. the IO failed to meet the extraordinary circumstances standard in the registry statement, does not believe it is possible to revise the standard or establish criteria so that the standard is stringent and not capable of being abused. So we have three in divergence, and we have agreement with suggestions for revision. These are probably the comments most that we need to make sure we have further clarity on, but is anything that came through something we need to double back on or look at again? I welcome comments, welcome anybody to raise their hand. It's been a quiet call. Starting to feel lonely? Nope. Okay, let's move on to the next section then. All right. 2.8.1.E.6, the role of the IO. Should the IO be limited to only filing objections based on the two grounds enumerated in the applicant guidebook? The Council of Europe is in agreement that it seems that there is no need to enlarge the scope of grounds to file objections enumerated in the applicant guidebook. Grand Registry Group recommends that the IO be limited to only filing objections on the two grounds. INTA is also in agreement. Sorry about the background noise. Is also in agreement. The Registry Stakeholder Group is in agreement with the new idea. The IO should be required to name one or more parties that initiated or supported the objection but would otherwise be unable to file. Okay, and then we have divergence from the ALAC stating that we think it is worth considering lifting the two ground limit on the IO's ability to file objections. They give an example about considering the situation underpinning a string confusion objection. I'm not going to get into that specifically. There's a lot to take there unless someone feels that we need to go over that fully at this point. Hearing none, let's move on. 2.8.E.7, the role of the IO. In the 2012 round, there was only one IO appointed by ICANN. For future rounds, should there be additional IOs appointed? If so, how would such IO divide up their work? Should it be by various subject matter experts? Okay, let's stop for a minute. Cheryl, you've highlighted something very important before we move on to this next session. You think that the ALAC one is an agreement rather than agreement slash new ideas?
I'm unsure that I would, Cheryl, for the record, I'm unsure. I think we need Justine to double check that the categorization of that ALAC comment is truly a divergent one. It's certainly not like some of the other comments in other sections we've seen saying that the IO should be abolished. It's saying that here is a modification proposal of some of the grounds that are the instructions of the IO or limitations the IO should operate within. And for me, I don't see that as a disagreement. I see it as a modification. Let's just asterisk that and make sure we double check on that if we could via Justine, and then perhaps look at changing its colour coding slightly if appropriate. But I pause at putting a pinky red hue over it. That's all. Back to you, Michael.
Justine, you've got your hand raised. I'll let you have it. Justine, I do not hear you. Your microphone might be on mute, please. Check.
Justine, I unmuted your mic. Do you want to try now? I'll private message her, Michael.
Okay, she's typing. I'll make sure we
can. Yes, just continue on, and we can catch up in the chat in time. Thanks.
All right, perfect. Okay, I just want to do a little glimpse forward on the background noise. So, Justine, might you want to try? Oh, there you go.
Sorry, yeah, this is Justine speaking. I take what Cheryl has said, but I mean, in terms of, if you look at the question that was asked, it was specific to. Sorry, I'm experiencing a bit of a lag, so I don't know whether I should be speaking on.
Are you just loud and clear? You're welcome to just go ahead and speak. I think we can carry pretty good.
Okay, I'm just going to put in a comment verbally, and I'm going to type it in the chat as well. What I was trying to say, this is Justine again, what I was trying to say is I take Cheryl's point, but I also looked at the question, and it talked about specifically about the two types of objections that the IO can file. So the ALAC's answer was pertaining to that, which is no. So, you know, it could be an agreement, but it could also be a divergence, as you know, indicated in the spreadsheet.
Thanks, Justine. I think we captured that pretty well. What we can consider is putting it, maybe taking it out of red and putting it in concerns as one aspect. But let's go ahead and leave that there. We are 6 minutes from the top of the hour. I have confidence that we could get through the next question. I will just stop to ask if there's any other business that we need to cover specifically. I don't hear any other business. Susan, Cheryl, you're typing. Multiple individuals are typing.
Yeah, let's see if we can get through the next bit, Michael. Keep going.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's go on. All right. 2.8. Well, okay, I already read the question. Should there be multiple IOs appointed, and how do we divide up the work? So first comment is INTA with an agreement stating that INTA suggests that perhaps there could be a small standing panel so that in case of a conflict of interest or circumstances which might give rise, could we have the background? Sorry, I think you're still on audio. Which might give rise to a perception of conflict. A panelist could step aside, and an alternative panelist could be appointed. The registry state. Oh, wow, my screen just went bonkers. Well, while I'm doing that, I believe the registry stakeholder group was in agreement. I'm so sorry. I'm close. So hold on a moment. I can find this just very briefly. Okay. All right, so registry stakeholder group has agreed with this, stating that accepts an alternate IO in case of conflict of interest and does not support multiple IOs. Okay, so if there's conflict of interest, but does not support the idea of multiple IOs, I'm not sure if that's full agreement or not, but worth looking at that. Others, such as NCSC, does not see the need for multiple IOs except where a conflict of interest is present. The IPC has a new idea, which is agreement, that there should be a standing panel of qualified IO. IOs, which rotates cases and skips over any IO who has a conflict of interest. So similar with what Inta proposed, an ALAC feel is in divergence, or at least marked as divergence, stating that suggests that the IO are that additional IOs are not needed and explains rationale for this. ALAC feels that there is no strong need for additional IOs to be appointed, taking into consideration five overarching factors. There's no clear evidence of an anticipated major increase in utility applications, the possibility of a conflict of interest on the part of appointed single IO, which either led him to which... I'm just trying to read that really quick so I can give a... I can't summarize that. The possibility of a conflict of interest on the part of the appointed single IO, which would either lead him or to not file an objection, which he or she would have otherwise had no qualms in filing, or one which would allow an applicant to easily challenge the validity of the IO's objection, with such risk being remote and manageable through the selection of IRO best candidate available. Unless the IO's unless their constraint is removed, the IO still is not permitted to object to an application unless there is at least one comment opposing that application. The IO already has resources at their disposal to consult subject matter and legal experts, and concerns over budget, jury burden, funding of the salaries of multiple IOs. All right. I do also, just before we close up here, I'm also feeling that some of those that state that they agree with conflict of interest, but not the idea of multiple IOs, should be agreement, but perhaps new ideas or maybe concerns or categories will be a little bit differently. Yeah, Susan, I think I agree with you as well. Inter-registry, Cyclical Group, and Insister are all listed as agreement, but they're not saying exactly the same thing. What I think would help here is if we took that back as an action item to just kind of, for us, the staff, to just go over this one more time and to give a bit more fluctuation, a bit more variety to this aspect. But I'm not going to go into it any further than that for our last minute. Given that, was there anything that anyone would like to say at this point about this section that I've not already captured? Hearing none, our next meeting will be at 21 UTC, December 13th for most of you, but December 14th for me. So, and Cheryl. So, sounds good. We will start on question 2.8.1.E.8 next week. All right, then. This is my chiming off for now. You have a wonderful weekend, and look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye for now.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, everyone. Today's meeting's adjourned. You can disconnect your lines. And Peggy, can you stop the recording, please?